You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I am Tony East, one of the hosts of this show. I cover the Indiana Pacers over at Forbes. Today's show will not have Adam. Nothing really happened on the free agency front on Tuesday. Kylo Quinn went away. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Other than that, not a whole lot of Pacers moves. I am wondering if we'll see something else in the future. If not, me and Adam will have a fun show tomorrow talking about O'Quinn and Summer League and stuff. But today, because there's no signings, we can get a little deeper on Brogdon and Lamb. And to do that, I did not have Adam. Instead, I had Walker Meal from Locked On Hornets talk about Jeremy Lamb and Brian Sampson from he does the Buck stuff for Forbes and Brew Hoop, the SB Nation site, come talk about Brogdon more. So two segments show, first one talking about Lamb, second one about Brogdon. And another thing, I used my Skype recorder for the Jeremy Lamb bit with Walker, and I always forget that my Skype recorder sucks, and occasionally the audio throttled, and I had to go back through and edit it and amplify it at some parts and de-amplify it at others. So apologies if it kind of like sounds like it's spiking or you can hear my air conditioning unit in the background at some points and not others. But I think I got it mostly smoothed out. So we'll start off with Jeremy Lamb, and then we'll get into the Brogdon stuff. And yeah, that'll be the whole show. So dig into more detailed stuff about the new two Pacers starting right now. All right, so Jeremy Lamb is in town, 3 years, $31.5 million, love the deal, think he's going to be a good player, but I know less about him than on the other line with me, the other person who would know more about him, Walker Mel. Walker is the Locked On Hornets host and does radio down there too, I believe. So Walker, man, tell everybody about yourself and let's talk about some Jeremy Lamb.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you having me on the podcast first and foremost. And yeah, I am the host of the Locked On Hornets podcast as well as the co-host of the morning show down here for the Charlotte ESPN affiliate, 7:30 The Game. And we're on from 6 to 10 in the morning. And so I appreciate, again, you guys having me on. And I'm ready to talk about a player that has developed one for the last 4 years in here with his time in the Hornets.
I was excited about that one. So I wrote an article looking for guys that could help, because Kevin Pritchard in his postseason press conference said, we need guys who can create and score off the dribble. And I think Jeremy Lamb can do that. And that's where I want you to start is, can he do that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely he can. And you've seen him grow more comfortable having those kind of responsibilities within the offense. Look, this has been a Charlotte Hornets team that has needed somebody to step up in a big way offensively. Nick Batum was a guy that they signed in that 2016 year where everybody went crazy when the salary cap rose. And it was a team that was just coming off of a playoff season where they went in within one game of moving on to the second round. It was a seven-game series against the Miami Heat, and they gave big contracts to Nick Batum, Marvin Williams. They got MKG, Cody Zeller. I mean, everybody knows the cap situation the Hornets are in. It's a bad one. And after that, they missed the playoffs a bunch of times. They needed somebody to step up and be able to score the basketball at a consistent rate. And so after Nick Batum gets his close to max deal at $26 million, it was the plan for him to become the second best player. And Jeremy Lamb became that guy. Jeremy Lamb was absolutely the second best player on the Charlotte Hornets team last year. And you look at that 2014-15 season for Jeremy. Ever since then, you've seen Jeremy increase his scoring output every single season. It's rose every single season from that time. And so you look at him averaging 15 points last year. He does have the ability to create off the dribble. He shot 37% 2 years ago, shot at about 35% from three last season. I think he's that kind of guy. Like, if they can shoot 36% from beyond the arc, absolutely you feel more comfortable about him taking those threes. He's got a great floater. It feels automatic anytime he's able to get within about 10 feet of the rim. He floats that thing up and you feel extremely comfortable that's going to go in. I like Jeremy Lamb's smoothness. He's never rattled. I always feel comfortable if he's able to get, again, within that 15 to 10-foot range. He's going to be able to get to the basket. He's a crafty guy. And I'm surprised to see you guys get him for only about $10 million annually. If you would have asked me at the beginning of this, I thought he was going to get 13 to 15, and it would not have surprised me if somebody overpaid, in my opinion, at about 16 or 17, but at 10 million, I'm very surprised. I think it's a tremendous signing for the Pacers, and the Hornets are going to miss him. He grew to be a fan favorite for the way that he developed in this organization.
I was pretty surprised by the money on the deal, too. I thought, you know, he's 6'5", like you just said. He's got, when I've been watching in this nasty floater runner game, you know, once he gets, because he's 6'5", once he gets in the lane, he's got the height advantage to just push the ball right over his man into the basket. He's a good player. Getting only $10 million a year was shocking to me, and I'm wondering how much they were able to sell to him. Hey, you're going to start until Oladipo comes back, and if things go well, maybe we can find a role for you that, you know, continues that. But, yeah, I was thrilled with the value because, like you said, he's developed into this nice scorer, league average 3-point shooter, and even if he, you know, gets less shots, I don't think that's a volume thing where he's like a rhythm 3-point shooter. I just think he's fine from there. So I look forward to him on that end of the floor. Outside of scoring, you like his mentality, I hear. What do you like about his game outside of his scoring ability?
Well, I think his defense has improved a lot, and it was funny because so Jeremy Lamb's story is an interesting one here. He comes to the Charlotte Hornets via trade with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Jeremy Lamb struggles on defense at the very beginning. It's somebody that wasn't as engaged. There would be some times that he would give you good offensive outputs, but he didn't play a complete game, and that drove Steve Clifford up the wall for his first 3 years that Steve Clifford was the head coach for the Charlotte Hornets team with Jeremy Lamb here. Steve Clifford, it seemed like Jeremy Lamb was the most berated player at the time because it seemed like Steve knew the talent that Jeremy had, and yet he just couldn't put it together on a consistent basis the first 2 years in the league. And remember, Rich Cho, the general manager at the time, he gave Jeremy Lamb an extension like a month after they brought him in with the organization. They immediately give him $7 million annually, and this was somebody that hadn't proved anything in the league yet. This was all based off of hopefully potential in their eyes. And the first 2 years, you're constantly waiting for him to show that he's worth even the $7 million annually that Rich Cho gave him. And then eventually the last 2 years, he finally answered the bell when we started to there was a lot of Hornets fans that started to give up on Jeremy becoming a really decent rotation player, somebody that would be useful in the NBA. But sure enough, he's developed. And that defense, I think, is something that Steve Clifford, a guy that is so hell-bent on you being a good defensive player if you're going to get minutes from him. Jeremy finally was able to be a consistent guy for Steve, and I think that's something that actually has really improved for Jeremy. And you talk about the mentality. I thought it was interesting. You mentioned just the rhythm, right? The rhythm of shooting. You don't think it's going to affect him, and I completely agree with that. You know, Jeremy Lamb actually was sent to the bench this past season in order to get Miles Bridges, the rookie that the Hornets have, a little bit more playing time. You know, trying to free up Nick Batum, who they just were so desperate to get more involved in offense rather than him just standing in the corner and doing nothing. It was Jeremy Lamb. They thought maybe putting him on the bench and having Nick Batum be more involved in the offense was better for that starting unit. And, you know, this was a time where Jeremy Lamb finally cracked the starting lineup the first half of this season. It was the first time he was a consistent starter. And Jeremy said, look, you know, I'll go to the bench. This is fine. I just want to do what's better for the team. And still, it was somebody that got a ton of minutes. But you talk about the mentality. Jeremy has grown into a professional. You know, he talks about not even just how he's grown on the basketball court, but learning how to be a professional, learning how to eat right, learning how to get more sleep. He constantly refers to Nick Collison in his Oklahoma City days about telling him to hit that cold tub. He's like, all right, you want an extra million to your contract? Hit that cold tub. I mean, okay, I guess you don't want to hit it. You don't want this extra money. I'll take your extra money. I'll go ahead and hit this cold tub. And he talks, it's more just than about the development on the court. It's really about him becoming a professional. And it's such a cool story. It was really cool to see him grow up here in the city of Charlotte because he absolutely did. And I'm glad to see him, even though it was a little bit underpaid in my opinion and a lot of people's, I am glad to see him get paid a good contract at least. $10 million annually is nice, and get to play with what is a certainly more attractive roster than the Hornets right now, and one that a lot of people have to be high on for what they did this offseason.
Yeah, only, isn't it crazy? It's only, we're recording this July 2nd. I feel like so much has happened in free agency, and it's the second day.
No, it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. It's,
well, you talk about just the guys that are out there right now. You know, Kawhi Leonard, obviously, everybody's on watch for him. But even the first and second tier guys are already gone. You know, now Willie Cauley-Stein is the news of the day, signing with Golden State. I mean, it's crazy that we're already here.
Yeah, it was so. I mean, that first night, I think the 6 p.m. start time just got every GM rolling, and it just so fast, bang, bang, bang. It was insane. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up his last deal because I went and looked at that right after he signed to see, you know, maybe he cashed in right away because his last deal wasn't super big or something like that. But to only, you know, he's averaging $7 million a year last time, now 10.5. Like, I feel like he improved way more than $3.5 million per season. I mean, he almost doubled his scoring output, and that's, like, his thing is he's a scorer, and his defense improved. You know, you're talking about all these things he got better at. To only get that small of a raise and still be, I'm agreeing with you here, underpaid, you know, this is obviously also too high, but 538 did their projections, and his five-year value is like 120 or 30 million on there. It's like, how is this, you know, it's not that high, obviously, but somehow this deal, you know, marriage worked out well for the Pacers, but it just, I'm surprised at how small the deal ended up.
No, I'm surprised as well. Look, I talked to you about it. Like, I thought he was going to get $15 million. I thought some team was going to give him $15 million annually, and I don't know how long the deal was going to be, 3 years, 4 years, sounded about right, but I thought he was going to get $15 million annually. And the question I have is, with Kemba Walker gone from Charlotte, he and Kemba were actually really tight, and I wondered if because Kemba was gone, you look at this roster and Jeremy's like, you know what, I want to go find a place where I can actually win and get to the postseason. That was not going to take place at all this season, certainly, and they couldn't even do it with Kemba being an All-NBA player last year. So you got to wonder if the Hornets would have offered him, you know, maybe $13 million, if he would have even accepted it just because of the situation they're in. And I don't know, you know, the Hornets, it would have been really tough for them to bring back Jeremy Lamb. Once they signed Terry Rozier, it was a certainty they weren't going to bring back Jeremy. But I wonder if Jeremy would have even come back. I wonder what kind of situation he was looking for. You know, Indianapolis, Charlotte, very similar cities as far as the market goes, and just as far as, you know, all the praise that each one of these cities get, that they're nice cities, and you wonder, he really loved Charlotte. And that was documented. We had his favorite bar that was just down the road from where I am right now. Loves darts, by the way. If you get the chance to talk to him about darts and give him a spot where he can go to on weekends or anytime during the off season, let him know he's a big darts guy. And so he found some things that he loved to do here. And I wonder if just that kind of city feel, being able to play for a team that's actually going to go to the postseason and potentially make a deep run, that had to be appealing to him, and maybe that caused him to take a little bit less money. I don't know who else was offering him more, but that's the only thing I can think of, because I'm with you. I thought it was going to be like 15 or something like that.
It's fun to look back at his transaction history as we run through this. His first thing, he got drafted by the Rockets and was traded in the James Harden trade, and then his second trade is for, is this right, Luke Ridenour and a second rounder?
Yeah, well, half the league was traded in exchange for Luke Ridenour, so I'm not surprised.
Wasn't that the year he played for like five teams?
I think the total came out to be like four teams in 6 days, something like that, and maybe even longer than that once you added a couple more days to it.
It was what a fun swing of values.
Yeah, and Jeremy Lamb's transaction. I mean, look, you know, you get drafted by the Rockets, and then you have to go to OKC, and it was interesting to see that OKC gave him up the way that they did. You thought maybe that they would want to hold on to somebody that did have the talent, obviously. I mean, we all know he was Kemba Walker's backcourt mate when they made that run and won the national championship, and certainly a dude that had a lot of talent. And so it just took a little bit. And sometimes you see these young guys with all the talent in the world, it takes longer than even 3-4 years to find your consistent way in the league. And Jeremy is one of those guys. And again, now we're talking about him being a good contributor for a good team.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Hornets a little too. But one last question about Lamb. We've talked about, you know, his defense is better than people give credit for. His scoring's good. He's a good dude. He gets along with his teammates. These are all great things, but he just got $10 million. What is Jeremy Lamb not good at? What am I missing here?
Well, he could be better shooting. I mean, like you said, you've seen he had the 37% year just 2 years ago, but mostly he's about 35 or under. That was, I don't know if you can call that an outlier, because it's not like it was so dramatically improved from his other seasons, but, you know, he could shoot a little bit better from three. I think Jeremy Lamb on defense, like, he's certainly gotten better, but he's not a stopper. You know, I think that, I don't know if you would call him a fantastic 3-and-D guy. I think you would talk about him in more of the scoring light, where, yes, he can hold his own. He's gotten better. but it is somebody that does struggle with lateral movement. You know, he can make up for it in length sometimes, where he's just got these arms that go for days, so that actually can cover some of his lack of quickness laterally. But yeah, he does get beat off the dribble at times. You know, there are times where there are mental lapses on defense, but you know, other than that, I just think you've seen his ceiling. It's very good. I think this is the type of player that he's going to be. I don't know how much more he can improve. But again, Tony, I don't got an answer for you. Like, I'm really surprised to see him get this type of money. I mean, he's not the perfect player, but you know, the flaws are that he's not crazy athletic. You know, he's not somebody that's, you know, going to dunk on somebody every single night. And I guess there's something there where a lot of people would rather throw money at somebody else. But yeah, you know, Jeremy Lamb is somebody that everybody thought he was going to get more than the $10 million annually that the Pacers gave.
Yeah, that's certainly something. And you seem to be very high on him, so I'm excited.
Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say about the size, too. Like, I love what the Pacers did, getting so much size on in the backcourt now. Like, Malcolm Brogdon, just the toughness, and getting him alongside Jeremy Lamb, who is probably more of a two than a three. You know, I expect him to play kind of like that swingman role, where maybe he can get you minutes at the three, but mostly it's going to be the two. I love what the Pacers did this offseason. I think you have to love it.
Yeah, they're going to go Aaron Holiday and just giant dudes in their nine-man rotation. So Hornets offseason so far is Frank Kaminsky walks, which, whatever. And Kemba goes to Charlotte. Kemba goes to Boston and Rozier comes to Charlotte. That's it so far, right?
That's the draft, of course.
Okay.
Right.
Kemba carried, obviously, an All-NBA load. And what, 37, 38 wins last year?
39. Got to 39.
Okay. Yeah. So you lose that guy. And then you bring in Rozier, who by all accounts, you know, maybe he just needs to find the right home, but doesn't seem to be the guy you'd want to be your starter long term. What's the outlook here in Charlotte? What's going on there?
So, look, the contract is bad. There's no way around it. Terry Rozier making close to $20 million annually. It's a bad contract. I think the reason that I'm not jumping off a cliff like a lot of other Hornets fans are is that there is an argument to be made that maybe he wasn't the right fit with the Celtics. You did see a good postseason, even though he was under 40% or right at 40%. That postseason, he averaged about 16.5. You know, you did see some moments from him. You know, just like a guy like Jeremy Lamb, you know, it took a long time for him to be consistent and show you that he is a good basketball player in this league. You know, there is some hope for Terry. So the Hornets, we've seen that before. You know, Kemba, the first 4 years in the league for Kemba, they weren't good. This was somebody that had very similar numbers, a little bit better, but very similar numbers to what Terry Rozier did, except at a bigger volume on a team that was the Bobcats at the time and the early Hornets, and that was the laughingstock of the league. So he's going to get more opportunities. He's going to put more shots up. So, yeah, I mean, if you put Terry Rozier on that team, you know, I could see Terry Rozier shooting under 40% but getting 17, and that's the numbers that Kemba was getting. And so there is some hope that, okay, this team is going to be bad. Terry Rozier's addition is not going to make them a team that can contend for the playoffs by any stretch, let alone even become even the 10 or 11 seed. So you take a chance on a guy, even if you overpay him pretty dramatically, you take a chance on a guy that can maybe find a right fit here in Charlotte, you know, maybe find something that he can tap into to be a consistent player. You've got Miles Bridges, you got P.J. Washington, you got Dwayne Bacon. There are some really nice pieces. I don't know what their ceiling is. I don't know how high it is. I doubt that any of them are all-star potential, but they're all young pieces that I think are pretty valuable right now for them, and there's just not a whole lot of assets in the Charlotte Hornets team. You know, the thing is, they're going to be tanking, and Terry Rozier is somebody that even if he can improve, even if he does show you that he's a good point guard or can be a good point guard, this isn't a team that is going to screw up their odds at getting a high pick. And so while the bad contract is there, I would rather not have it on the books. There are some things that make it okay and make me understand, all right, you know, you needed a body at point guard. You didn't want to go for Ish Smith or Emmanuel Mudiay or somebody like that. You want to go for Rozier, who does seem to have some type of ceiling. Okay, you know, all right, let's roll with it. I don't love it, but there are some things that make you understand it a little bit more.
Yeah, that does make more sense to me than the two guys you just named, especially. I am rooting for the Hornets rebuild just because currently it looks like it's going to be Rozier from Louisville. You got Malik Monk from Kentucky. You got P.J. Washington from Kentucky. You got Miles Bridges from Michigan State. And you got Zeller from Indiana. That is a Midwestern five right there, baby. That's going to be a good team someday.
Well, and we got rid of Frank Amensky, or else we'd had another one from Wisconsin. I mean, it's amazing. They fell in love with the Big Ten, and it's the Big Ten and Kentucky. I mean, they've got MKG on the team as well from Kentucky.
Yeah, yeah.
They love the Wildcats and the Midwest teams that have taken over here in Charlotte.
I love it. I'll be rooting for them. Walker, appreciate you coming on to talk some Jeremy Lamb and some Hornets. Where can people follow you?
I appreciate you having me on. You can follow me at Walker Mail. And in case you want to hear anything else about the Hornets at all, in case bad basketball does interest you, you can listen to us on Twitter, or you can follow us on Twitter, I should say, at Locked On Hornets as well. And again, Tony, I appreciate you having me on. It was fun, man.
Yeah, thank you so much. Take care.
All right, I hope you learned a little bit about Jeremy Lamb, and now we'll take a quick break, and then we will talk about Brogdon, Malcolm Brogdon with Mr. Bucks Film Room, Brian Sampson himself, so stick around. All right, now joining me to talk about the Pacers' star grab of free agency so far. I don't imagine there being a better one, but I'm still going to say so far to be optimistic. Malcolm Brogdon is Brian Sampson, Mr. Bucks Film Room. Covering the Bucks for Forbes and over at Brew Hoop, the SB Nation Bucks site. Brian, first of all, how you doing? You keeping up with free agency?
Yeah, I'm trying to. There's definitely a lot of moving and a lot of grooving, so trying to keep up.
Yeah, you guys, it feels like the Bucks have been busy just because they have so much in flux, but it's really just been keep your own guys so far.
Yeah, it's been a lot of noise as far as, well, the four moves, like with the Bucks, big free agents with Middleton, Brook Lopez, got to clarify that now, Malcolm Brogdon, and then George Hill. But then, yeah, the two additions of Robin Lopez and then Wes Matthews as well. So six moves overall, but four of them, well, I guess three of them is just them retaining their own guys.
Yeah, we'll talk. Yeah, and they had to do some funky cat maneuvering to keep a lot of those guys, too. We'll talk Wes Matthews. I think that's an awesome, awesome fit for you guys at the end here. But, of course, this is a Pacers show, and we're talking about the Brogdon stuff. I'm doing something later on the actual sign-and-trade aspect of this, so you do not get to focus on the trade part, although it is good for you guys to snag some assets out of this. This is just I want to focus on Brogdon's play on the court and what he can bring to the table. So, just give me an overview. What are a couple of your favorite things about Malcolm Brogdon?
He is incredibly smart. I think that's the first thing, is that he's a very smart player. He understands how to read defenses. He understands how to play defense and how to communicate. And he's never rattled. I think that's the big thing that stands out. When you look at some of the big games that the Bucks were in last year, and when they needed a big shot down the stretch, the ball kind of always seemed to find him, and he hit tough shots. I can think of one of the earlier games against the Raptors, not in the playoffs, but in the regular season, where Brogdon hit two huge threes. I think one was like to tie it. And then the other one was for the Bucks to eventually take the lead and win the game. So he really is just calm. He's cool. He's collected. He's not a guy who's going to get too high or too low. He's just kind of always going to go with it. And so I think that's kind of the big thing, is he can be like that stabilizer for a team, the guy who can really just keep the team together, keep everybody in it, and keep everybody calm. I think obviously the other thing is his shooting ability, his accuracy. He joined the 40, 50, 90 club or whatever last year. And he did so, you know, he's just very selective about his shots. He doesn't always force things. I think that's something like Wes Matthews, he kind of forced his shots more often, but Brogdon just let the game come to him. If his shot was open, he would take it. If the guy is closed out too hard, he would attack the rim. That's a really his ability to score around the hoop was greatly improved last year. It could have had a little bit to do with the Bucks' five out offense that they ran, but he was very efficient around the rim. He was very efficient from downtown. And so I think that's just something, is that is just a smart player who, at least when he was with Milwaukee, he played within himself, understands his strengths and weaknesses and the strengths and weaknesses of his teammates and the opposing team, and knows how to attack them.
Yeah. I like that you said, you know, he's calculated off the dribble game, because to me at first, like this is early June, late May, when the Pacers look like they're going to have like 40 million of space, when everybody was bringing up Brogdon as a free agent. And I was like, yeah, Brogdon's good. You know, I think he'd be a good fit. I think they need a little bit more shot creation off the dribble. And then I start watching him more and I'm like, wait, Brogdon is good. Like
you know, if a closeout blows by him and forces him off the line, or if the defense is scrambling a little bit before he catches the pass, he's got a quality off the bounce game to both get his own shot and set up someone else. I don't think he's like an awesome passer, but he's a plus passer. And I think I really sold him short personally and his creation game, both for himself and others, mostly because, you know, it's not like they're calling us a pick and roll for him every time down the floor, but just like as an ancillary off the bounce guy, he's got a lot more skill than I thought.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's not the most athletic guy. And so what he relies on is his strength. He's strong as hell. So if he gets just even half a step on his guy, he does a great job of illegally using his off arm and using his strength to keep that guy on his back hip. And if he can get that defender on his back hip, then he can find his way to the hoop. So I think, you know, he does a great job of using his strength to make up for that lack of athleticism. I mean, you'll see he hardly dunks. I mean, at 6'5", he'll have clear runway to the lane or to the hoop, and he just doesn't have that burst, but he definitely uses his strength to his advantage to make up for that.
Yeah, it's really nice to see that addendum from him, and I almost felt bad for like not having the right answer when people would talk about it earlier in the summer, but now we're here, and I think he's a snug fit with Oladipo, just, you know, as like a secondary creator to a guy who can really break down the D. I mean, obviously not in the same way Giannis did, but I had a concerns at first of like, oh, maybe he's just thriving next to Giannis. But then you look at his numbers with Giannis off the floor, and that couldn't be more wrong. So I feel like with and without Oladipo, he's going to be fine in this Indiana system. On the flip side, the other end of the floor, another good thing about Brogdon, that defense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was the... When the Bucks played the Raptors in the Eastern Conference Finals, Brogdon was the only other guy besides Middleton that Budenholzer trusted to guard Kawhi Leonard. And so I think that, you know, says a lot. He's not a world beater. He's not going to go and lock down somebody like Kawhi, or he's not going to lock down elite defenders or elite offensive wings. But he's about above average, maybe a little bit better wing defender. So I think that he can really, that's where his smarts come in, is he has okay lateral quickness, but he's strong enough where he's not going to get bullied, and he knows how to take the right angles, and he knows how to communicate with his teammates to really put him in the best position to succeed. And so he's just really a smart defender who can do a lot of things, and he can guard 1 through 3. He could maybe guard a smaller 4 if needed, but he can guard 1 through 3, and he can really mix it up, and he just makes guys work. He doesn't do anything spectacular. He has pretty decent hands as far as his ability to come up with some steals, but otherwise he just plays tough defense, and he just makes the offense work and earn for everything that they get. And if they're going to hit a tough shot, you know, they're going to do so with Brogdon right there close to him and making that offensive player work.
So you mentioned his defense being able to play or to guard 1 through 3, excuse me. And I think what's going to end up happening, I'm almost positive, is that he's going to end up starting at point guard. But I think a lot of Bucks people are less inclined to think he is a point guard. And I think maybe this isn't a negative, but I just want to hear your thoughts on it. Like, because he was definitely more off ball there, and he wasn't taking the ball off the floor every time or anything like that. How do you feel like he fits as a point guard versus, you know, I feel like he's more of a combo guard or off ball guard myself.
Yeah, I don't see him as a point guard at all. He can initiate offense, and he can, you know, bring the ball up the floor. He does just fine that way, but I wouldn't rely on him to create shots for others necessarily. He definitely can do it. It's definitely a part of his game that just kind of comes within the flow, but it's not something that he's a natural at doing. I would more label him as like a 2/3. And so I think that he can provide some of that like secondary ball handling when he's on the floor. He can do some of that stuff. Like if a guy is open, he has no issue making that pass or making that read. But I don't know how he would do it as a full-time point guard. I think with Milwaukee, he may have played in the floor on the team as like the de facto point guard, but they also relied on a whole bunch of kind of secondary ball handlers at once, whether it'd be like him on the floor sharing it with Middleton and Giannis or whoever else that could also kind of share some of those ball handling responsibilities. So I think that would be the key, is making sure that the Pacers have other guys around him who can help ease some of that load or can help ease that shot creation. Is kind of the main thing that I worry about, is he's not necessarily a guy who can just, you know, you think of point guards of someone who can kind of create for others at the same time, and he's just not necessarily that right guy.
Yeah, I have the same level of thought where I'm like, I don't know if this is the perfect one. Now, I think with Oladipo back, when Victor is the guy who ultimately has the ball and is setting up stuff and is getting the attention of the defense, that makes a little bit more sense. You know, it doesn't really effectively matter who's the one or the two when they're both there. But at the beginning of the year, when he's with Lamb and Warren, I think you might have some issues of setup and passing. In fact, that's like a pretty terrible passing backcourt, but we'll deal with that later. We're talking about Brogdon here. But yeah, that's my probably my biggest concern with him, honestly. It's just like, okay, if this guy's your full-time one, how much passing are you really sacrificing for efficiency and defense? Is that worth it? Now, I think he's obviously still a positive player. They didn't pay him that much money to not be a positive player, but I just think that could be a little bit awkward of a fit. And I just did a segment on Jeremy Lamb. We just talked about all these good things. Tell me something you don't like. What does Malcolm Brogdon struggle with?
He gets tunnel vision like a mofo, and that's one thing that drove Bucks fans crazy, and you guys will definitely see it, is he just gets in these moods sometimes where he'll put his head down and he'll just head to the rim, good or bad. And because of that lack of athleticism, he did a really nice job of finishing around the rim this year, but in the past he's had his ups and downs. And so I think that's just one thing that is a weakness that stands out, is like, if he's taking the ball up the floor, I can remember like concretely in my mind several times where Giannis or somebody would be open up ahead where you would just want to see him do that outlet pass, but he just gets into these moods where he'll put his head down and just start dribbling into the hole. It's not like he's
Corey Joseph syndrome.
Yeah. So it's not like he's like dribbling all over the place. He'll just go to the hole, good or bad, no matter who gets in his way, and not really see his teammates. So I think that's one thing that sticks out as kind of one of his weaknesses. Sometimes on defense, you know, I said he's an above average defender, but sometimes he can kind of get where he has these cement blocks in his feet where it almost looks like he's, you know, on skates. And so I think that happens a little bit more frequently than you would like, especially with a guy who's often being tasked or was being tasked with defending pretty good wing defenders or offensive players. So I think, you know, that's just something that he needs to work on as well. One thing I'd be interested to see, especially before Depot comes back, is how he does as one of like the primary go-to guys on offense. In Milwaukee, he really was third or fourth option on the offense. And so that really, when you look at when other teams were making their assignments, you know, Giannis, Middleton are right up there. Then Bledsoe deserves some attention. And so Brogdon was really kind of getting like the other team's maybe worst wing defender at times. And so I'd be interested to see how that translates to Indiana when he's going to be, you know, bumped up the totem pole a couple more steps and not be just it. Not that he was an afterthought in Milwaukee, but he wasn't the primary concern. And so I'm really interested to see how he handles that extra attention, where especially until Depot comes back, where he might be one of the top guys that teams scheme against when they play Indiana. So I'd really be interested to see that. The other thing I'd put in a worry column is his release. He's got like this just kind of slow and low release, and that really prevents him from getting shots up in tight spaces and creating his own shot a lot of the times. Part of the reason why he shot so well in Milwaukee was because he was able to be selective and really take those threes when they're wide open. You know, if a defender gets close to him, he can't get that shot off because it's really a low shot and it takes a lot longer to load than you would like. And so that's another thing, is that he can't necessarily, you won't see him doing step backs. You won't see him shooting three pull up threes in a defender's face. It's really, he needs that space to get a shot off. And if a defender closes out too hard, that's when you'll see him drive, but he really needs an extra foot or two to get a shot off than a lot of wings.
Well, the Pacers never shoot threes unless they're wide open. So
there you go. It fits right in.
Fits right in that way. Yeah. Moving up the totem pole is something that I'll be curious to see. Like, I just look at his usage rates, and that, you know, like 20% is his highest. Like, that's nothing. You know, that's just like a guy who happens to be out there. Now, I do think even if a better defender is moved on to him, TJ Warren and Jeremy Lamb, for just being like average efficiency guys, they can be, you know, league average true shooting on a pretty high volume anyway. So I'm not super worried about like a worse defender sliding onto either of them, but it will hurt Brogdon specifically. I think you're absolutely right about that.
But I think my thesis and overall takeaway with Brogdon is where you started. You know, obviously he has some skills that that might not be perfect here, but I think he fits really well. But the big thing for me is that high IQ. I think we saw in the playoffs, and you especially as the Bucks were in the conference finals, the teams that make it really far have a lot of high IQ players. I think that matters a lot. I think, you know, beyond your own skills, you have to be able to see the game at a high level to be able to functionally use any good skill you have. And Brogdon being a smart player just means he can insert himself into any situation. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I think his foot, too, is something to be weary of. It was red flagged when he entered the draft back in 2016. And now I think it was his left foot that was flagged in 2016. And I believe that's the foot that he struggled with in 2017-18. And then this year he hurt his foot as well, but it was his right foot this year. So he has not played more than 75 games in any year. He missed 18 games in the regular season this past year, and he missed 34 games the year before. And that both of them were right toward the end of the year, where then that lingered over. This year he's able to come back in game 5 against the Celtics, and then he played very well. But 2 years ago when he returned right away or right at the end of the regular season and came back when the Bucks are playing the Celtics, and he was just awful against the Celtics in the playoffs. So that's 2 years in a row where he's hurt his foot toward the end of the season, and it's cost him significant time. And so I think that's something, you know, that may be a factor as to why the Bucks didn't match a salary and went with a sign and trade, is they might have concerns about that foot. So I think it's just something to pay attention to, which I hope that it works out for Brogdon. I hope that it works out for the Pacers. I'd love to see Brogdon do well there. I just could see that being the biggest barrier of preventing this from being a successful signing.
Yeah, I get that. And I think this has happened before with the Pacers, where there's guys with injury histories that they're less afraid. Their training staff is so good. I know every team thinks that, but like the Pacers training staff was the All-Star Game training staff last year for, what was it, Team Giannis? There it is. I always forget the names of the teams, and it's not East versus West. But, they've done that a few times. So, or it might have been 2 years ago. Man, I can't even remember. Anyway, they're really good, and you know, there's a reason that they've had guys playing over 80 games two seasons in a row. I'm most worried about that. Speaking of a guy who was healthy and played a bunch of games in Indiana, off to Milwaukee goes Wesley Matthews. And that is a good fit for you guys as a guy who can defend wings, take some pressure off Giannis and Middleton on that end, and who can shoot. Are you excited about that signing? Think he's a good fit?
Yeah, I was just actually doing some film study last night and kind of learning more about Wes Matthews. He played his high school ball at Madison Memorial, which is in Wisconsin, and then he played college at Marquette, which is in Milwaukee. And so there's some familiarity there, but that was years ago at this point. It should be exciting to see how he fits. He'll have an opportunity to replace Brogdon in the starting lineup. We'll see if that comes. There will be a lot of competition. But, yeah, I'm definitely interested to see. We talked about Brogdon moving up on the totem pole, and Wes Matthews will definitely be moving down. So I'm interested to see if that can help him, you know, regain some of that efficiency.
Yeah, they actually let him chuck in Indiana, which is something that, you know, they didn't have a guy who could do that. So it was rare to see McMillan that happened. But, you know, he's kind of one trick pony as a chucker, where it's just one hard dribble right, step back behind the line, let it fly. But he makes pretty good amount of them. So it's not the worst thing ever. But I think with Milwaukee, like you're saying, all of a sudden he's just not solely a spot up guy, but mostly a spot up guy. He's going to thrive on the offensive end.
Yeah. I mean, they won't ask him to do too much because they still have Bledsoe, Giannis, Middleton. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of spacing the floor, a lot of catch and shoots, and we'll see how that goes. His minutes will also probably be cut drastically just because they won't need him so much. So it has the potential to work out.
Yeah, he's the Tony Snell replacement. The trade made me sad, man. I got a roof. He's the best NBA Tony left. And salary dump him for John Lewer.
You know, you got to do what you got to do. Those Tonys aren't worth much these days.
Tony Parker retired. Tony Snell got salary dumped.
Is he really the only Tony in the NBA?
No, I think there's one more. Maybe I thought there was one more that isn't Tony Snell or Tony Parker. Tony Bradley, that's right, that Jazz center, but he's nothing either.
Yeah. Jeez, you're going to have to make it. You're going to have to step up your game.
I know. It's brutal. Tony Snell getting salary dumped. Well, Brian, thank you for coming on. Where can people follow you, all your stuff?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Bucks Film Room. I write for Brew Hoop, and I write for Forbes about the Milwaukee Bucks.
yeah, he's got a great palette of information coming out with X's and O's and cap stuff and all the Bucks stuff you need. So go check out Brian and his stuff. And yeah, we'll talk about the Brogdon sign-and-trade coming up. Thank you guys for this section, and we'll see you after the break.